Thanks, Greg. Yes, we're here with Daniel Matsukawa after he's played the Mozart Bassoon Concerto. Bravo.
Thank you. Thanks so much. And it's always an honor and pleasure to stand up in front of this orchestra and be a soloist. And it's such a beautiful, joyful piece.
And you've played it a couple different times recently. You've played it in 2009 with this orchestra. Mm-hmm. How is your experience this time?
I guess with everything, I always like to call myself a student for life. I'm always hoping to grow and get better. And every time whether it's Beethoven's Third Symphony, the Eroica, whether we do it every season or every other season, every time I play it, I always hope that the next time I play it, I've grown a little bit. Doesn't mean that I will purposefully try to do it differently, but I'm hoping that just from personal growth and everything from this journey, and again, being a student for life, I'm always hoping to grow and get better. And same with this concerto in particular that is often asked for auditions. I had to play this piece for my audition with the Philadelphia Orchestra. But for me, Mozart, too, is I always like to say, I'm not a Mozartian scholar. I didn't go to Salzburg and study his manuscripts inside and out. But to my best knowledge, I try to give somewhat of a feeling of classical style. Mozart, Haydn, very different than, of course, Brahms, and then go on later, Lush, and you know, Wagner, Bruckner, Mahler, we can go on and on. But for me, Mozart, what does it mean to play his music, his works? Well, he did it all. He wrote not just sonatas and concerti and symphonies, but he also wrote many, many incredible operas, as all of us know. And so, really, in his music, he expresses it all. He expresses everything. And I love that. The other thing I also like to say is sometimes back in the day, of course, Mozart, Haydn, it was more courtly, you know, powdered wigs, kings and queens, and these gestures of how do you do, may I have this dance, would you like some tea? And there's this feeling of that courtship. And I think the music, of course, depicted that.
Well, you say it's now such an established piece, it's used for auditions. Is it used for auditions because it demonstrates the instrument in a particular way?
Yes. The other thing about Mozart, why people say it's quite difficult, is because you cannot hide in Mozart. It is so honest. His music is so pure and honest. My big pet peeve when it comes to Mozart is it should not have gimmicks. There are no shticks and gimmicks. And look how loud I can play. Now I can do a disappearing act. Look how soft I can play. Mozart was never about that. Sure, there are some composers, I won't name them, but where their music may not have had as much depth. So you have to do a lot more. You have to do many things. You have to put in a lot of crescendos, diminuendos, what have you, different dynamics. But Mozart, it's all there. It's in the music, and it's so honest and so true. And I think that's why people, I believe, why they find it to be quite tricky and demanding.
Are there any particular parts that you are constantly playing with or rediscovering?
Sure, I often have for example, articulations, length of notes, trills, should they start on the upper note or the lower note, things like that. But a tool I use when I practice is I sing a lot. I'm not going to sing for you, don't worry.
No, that would be great.
No, I will kindly decline. But it's one of these things I would sing, and then I would try to hopefully emulate that through my bassoon. And by singing, it's the most natural way to make phrasing. We don't have to think about our fingers, our technique, the instrument, the embouchure, the breathing, and the support. And we just sing, and it's just a really natural way to create music, whether you're in the shower, whether you're doing the dishes, or just walking around Rittenhouse Square. And, for example, the conductor this week, Jane Glover, paid me a great compliment the other day in the first rehearsal. She said, you sound like a singer. And she said, just so you know, that's like the highest compliment. And I said, I put my hand over my heart. And I was like, believe me, that means everything to me. And I try to teach that as well, that I want people, the listeners, to forget that they're hearing the bassoon. And I want them to just hear the music rather than just, oh, that's a bassoon and that's an instrument.
Are there any particular parts you'd want to illustrate that are ideal to show that?
Sure. Well, for example, the second movement, people can argue musically and in a friendly way that he, well, quotes himself later on in his opera, The Marriage of Figaro, where the Countess enters in the opening of Act Two. And it, yes, it is the exact same melody and the theme. So I can play some of that just to sort of show you, for example. Thank you. I will quote the part of the opera from this, the Countess aria, where it's sort of, you can hear the similarities. But you can hear right away the theme is exactly the same. Actually, for that, it's in key in E flat, but it's a whole step higher for us in F major.
Well, the bassoon itself is such a fascinating instrument. For the people who have never seen it up close, can you talk about how it's constructed? It looks about 4 feet, but I understand it's actually 8 feet of tubing.
You're quite right. It's in actuality, because it's sort of folded in half for us. And if I was just to strain it out, it would be between 8 and 10 feet long. Obviously, my arms are not that long, so luckily they condensed it for us. And it's made of maple wood, and we use what we call a double reed of bamboo cane. And the bassoon is often known as the clown of the orchestra.
Why?
Well, I think Mozart, Beethoven, Tchaikovsky all wrote beautiful, beautiful lines, singing lines for the bassoon. Shostakovich was extremely kind and generous. However, Shostakovich was much more similarly in terms of trying to use all the characteristics of the bassoon. You know, we have Prokofiev, who used it as a grandfather, the flute for the bird, et cetera, et cetera. But I think what did us in was the Sources Apprentice. And once you start hearing that, that humorous character, I think that changed everything for us. And suddenly people relate the bassoon with broomsticks and Mickey Mouse and then you opened up a whole range and repertoire for all the cartoons, and you can hear a lot of that on the bassoon.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, it illustrates this tremendous range where you can sing an aria and you can have a sense of humor as well.
Right. And so my wish, I can say this personally, is that people hopefully will walk away after hearing the bassoon as a more lyrical instrument. Yes, we can play short notes. We can play funny notes. But at the same time, it's a story I just told one of my students. My dad, my father, used to ask me to play late at night, like around 11:30, and so it could help him fall asleep. And so I would look at him, I would be like, so wait, are you saying my playing is boring? He said, no, it's just so mellow and so beautiful and soothing. And so I would love people to remember more of the lyricism. You can call it the lullaby, you can call it that singing aspect, again, rather than the bouncy Humpty Dumpty character.
Well, it's so much fun listening to you, and I gather from watching you it's a lot of fun playing this as well.
Thanks so much. To have this orchestra behind me, too, it's getting to stand in front of them. It's absolute sheer joy and pleasure, and this sort of collaboration and give and take, and I turn around and I smile, they smile, and we all know each other, of course, but just not just the musicianship and the friendship, but it's so human what we do, and it's always so meaningful, and then we hope to share that and portray that out to the listeners and the audience.
Thank you so much, Danny Matsukawa.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.